Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, September 28th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So, Alex, I'm going to confess and let our listeners in on, you know, kind of the inside secrets here. This is the second time that we're recording this episode because we had a technical glitch, which was like totally my fault. So all I can say for our listeners is that this episode's likely to be really good because we've already done it once. but anyway, yeah. So what?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case because, yeah. But yeah, it is unfortunate that we have to do it twice. Let's put it that way. But yeah. I'm looking forward to this second version of this week's episode.
Yeah. So why don't we start with the week ahead? What do we have in terms of deadlines? I know we're still, you know, there's still some schools that have those round one or kind of early deadlines.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. In terms of the upcoming week, we've got deadlines for Columbia early decision. And I, you know, I'm a big believer. If you really want to go to Columbia, you really want to be in the early decision round.
Yeah.
Sloan, which is notoriously late for round one. So we must be getting towards the end of the cycle, actually, for round one applications, if Sloan's actually got a deadline. And Dartmouth Tuck. Last week it was Duke, Booth, Haas, Emory were some of the schools. What I would also say, we're starting to see some interview invites coming out on Livewire, and Yale is sort of, well, obviously Columbia through its early decision round has been releasing interview invites for several weeks, and there's been a couple of other schools, but Yale, who's, you know, may have, its deadline was sort of middle of September, has already started releasing interview invites. And that's actually very typical of Yale, Graham, as you would know. As soon as they get their deadline is done, they'll take a quick look at the apps, decide to invite a few folk, and then they go through this sort of longer process of evaluation to in terms of who else they're going to invite. Not quite sure how they come up with the first few out of the gate, but they're always getting a few early guys out of the gate, guys being gender neutral in terms of getting those invites out.
Yeah, and that was, you know, there was that flurry of activity last week with Yale, which again, as you say, we always see.
Yeah.
The other thing that's funny to me is, you know, we talk about how we're coming towards the end of the first round. You know, MIT is usually one of the later, you know, deadlines. I think NYU Stern has a later deadline as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything's been shifted because when you and I worked at Wharton many years ago, the very first deadlines were like in early October, and it typically ran until November, with some schools not even giving admissions decisions until like after Christmas for round one. So everything's been shifted forward, which I think is great for applicants. It allows them to, you know, get the apps in earlier, spend the summer working on them, and then get news before the holidays. So anyway, yeah, just interesting to see that shift over time with, you know, now very few schools have an October deadline. It's all September. Most of them are packed into September.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's actually been very good for candidates, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah. I forgot we talked about that on our first go at this podcast, Graham. So well,
that's
done
right
for remembering to say that again.
I'm trying to remember all the like really great stuff that we had to say. So one other thing we did talk about that I wanted to mention is the interview archive. So as, you know, Columbia, Yale, and other schools are giving out interview invitations, and we'll see more, you know, invites from other schools too, I just wanted to make sure everyone who listens to this podcast is aware that we have an archive on the website of firsthand reports from applicants where they indicate what school they interviewed at, what the format was, what questions they received. And it's a really great, I mean, I would argue it's the largest archive of interview questions for business school on the internet. Like, I don't think there's anything that comes even close. And it's, yeah, it's a fantastic resource. And Alex, you actually helped to come up with the concept for this archive, and so thousands and thousands of interview reports later, it's just become a terrific resource. So I encourage everyone to look at that if you want to see what questions you might get. And Alex, I know you've been saying to me that you think things might be a bit different this year, but how might someone use the archive even if things are different?
Yeah, I mean, I like you say, I'm pretty proud of what we've got in that interview archive. And what I would say to candidates is your format for the interview might be different this season. It might be online versus more traditional sort of face-to-face. And you might be getting interviewed by a different interviewer, i.e. it might be an adcom versus an alum, as in the past. But I would suggest that the types of questions and what the schools are trying to get out of the interviews are going to be the same.
Right.
They're not going to be changing that. So what's the interview archive really good at? showing you a pattern of questions that each of the schools ask. So yeah, it's a fantastic resource. We're already seeing interview reports coming in for those early interviewers this season. So use the resource and then contribute to it. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and it's free, so there's no reason not to. Now, if you're really lazy and you want like extra insight, you can buy with interview guides for every school. And the interview guides are, you know, they tell you everything you need to know about a school's interview process, and they kind of aggregate everything that's in the archives to sort of distill it down into like, these are the questions that the school asks most frequently. So there's some useful, you know, you could save a lot of time in buying those, but those are on the site too, but you have to pay for those. So, we, you know, I tend not to try to push the paid stuff as much on the podcast. So we don't want it to be a sales pitch, but in any event, there are resources out there. If you're prepping for an interview, go to the website, you'll get help. And that can be really useful. The other thing I wanted to mention is last week, we unveiled our first ever data dashboard that allows users of the site to explore LiveWire data in aggregate for over the last several admission seasons. And this is something that people who use the site have been clamoring for, I want to say for like a couple of years, and it took us a while, but we spent a lot of time working on building some tools that allow you to kind of noodle with all the data we have, right? So you can benchmark yourself, see like, what do people that have my numbers, you know, GMAT, GRE, GPA, what's been the outcome for them at a given school? We also have another tool in there that allows you to compare like multiple schools together and see all the historical data on those schools. And there's even, there's like a benchmarking tool where you can literally just put in your stats and see like what percentage of people with, you know, a 700 on the GMAT or lower were able to get an interview invite at a certain school of your choice, right? So you can literally, there's just so many ways to use this data, and I'm really excited about this. And it is paid, and I know I just said we don't want to promote paid stuff too much on the podcast, but it's kind of a steal. It's $20 for a month, or it's like $50 for the whole year. So kind of a no-brainer to just buy a year. But in any event, it's a really useful tool. It'll help you to better understand what schools you might want to add to your list, and just to get a feel for like what's happening to people in the process and historically, like how has it worked in terms of what does it take to get an interview invite at some of these schools. So Alex, I know you were involved a little bit in that project, and I know Alex Kelly, who moonlights as our podcast producer as well, spearheaded that initiative and basically took it to, you know, from, you know, conception to product that's now out in the market. And so she deserves a big hat tip on that. But yeah, I'm excited about this, Alex.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fantastic. Well done to Alex Kelly for getting this out there. I think the reality is we have a lot of data. So this is our first sort of effort to sort of make that data available, aggregate it, sort of make useful tools from it, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, same.
I've actually enjoyed playing with it myself, but I got a free version.
Me too. I've been spending a lot of time noodling with it. It's just fun to see like how things have changed, and you can compare like 1 year to another, see if like, you know, test scores have been going up in terms of what it takes to get in somewhere. And again, we know test scores and GPA are not the end all be all. But it's just interesting to kind of look at this data and see what it tells us. So without further ado, why don't we dive in and start talking about the candidates that you've selected for this week. We've got a few ApplyWire entries, so let's dive in. We've got ApplyWire. This is the first one's an ApplyWire entry, so this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this person's got five schools on their list. They are ESADE, HEC Paris, IE Business School, ESA, and INSEAD. I think we've got every letter of the alphabet in those acronyms there. But we've got, so they're very focused on Europe. They want to start ASAP, I presume next fall. And they've got goals in kind of tech and entrepreneurship. GMAT score 750, GPA 3.9. This person has 2 years of work experience to date. They are an American located in Chicago, but they're hoping to land in Spain or maybe France after business school. They're also open to landing back in the U.S., but they seem pretty set on trying to get to Europe. They indicated that they went to a top 20 undergraduate business program, and you know they had a scholarship to do so. They did study business and finance, and they spent a semester in Spain, so they're fluent in both Spanish and have pretty good proficiency in Portuguese. Really interesting candidate. I mean, the thing that jumps out for me is they talked a lot about this desire to kind of get out of the US, do the MBA in Europe, and maybe just stay there. And I know they elaborated on that and you had some back and forth, but what do you make of this? We don't see that many American candidates with only European schools on their list. And no offense, but they don't have any UK schools either, Alex, so they don't want to go to your country either.
Yeah, they want to go to the EU, not Europe-wide,
yes,
which we are in.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, back to you, Graham. Do you see this as an emerging trend, like US-based folks wanting to use the MBA to explore other regions of the world? Because as you say, this is quite unusual. But, you know, there is certain sentiment in the US. You know, things might be changing. Maybe getting the MBA in the US isn't the be-all and end-all, and potentially getting an equivalent type of MBA elsewhere in the world might provide some terrific opportunities.
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds on this. So on the one hand, I hear you. I think this person even said in their comment that they're kind of fed up with the environment in the US. And so I presume they're referring to maybe the current administration or the immigration environment, or there could be anything. I mean, even the handling of you know, the pandemic or something, right? So I get that there could be that momentum for some people looking to just go somewhere else. At the same time, I, you know, personally, like when I think about picking up and moving overseas, that's not something that comes to mind in the middle of a pandemic either. So I guess they're kind of banking maybe on the fact that by the time they matriculate next fall, there'll be a vaccine and that people will be able to travel again more freely. But it's an interesting question. I mean, I still kind of feel like if you want to work in the United States, that a European MBA is a tougher sell, right? If you want to be, you know, if you're going to be in the U.S., the brand of the U.S. schools is probably stronger in almost all instances, as long as we're talking about top schools,
yeah,
right? So that's, it's an interesting quandary. I do think, you know, you and I have mentioned this before, that the European schools and just non-U.S. schools in general have upped their game over the years. They're increasingly competitive. And so, you know, we do see candidates with a bunch of U.S. schools and then they have an LBS or an INSEAD on their list or whatever it might be, HEC. And so we're seeing that more and more. But I don't know. It's a good question. Will Americans just start to say, you know what, I'm going to do the MBA somewhere else? I'm not sold on it yet, but it could happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's super interesting. Yeah, this person doesn't have LBS on their list. We just don't see that many folks based in the US, from the US, only applying to European schools. So I'm very interested in this candidate. This candidate, to me, Graham, is... They've only got 2 years of experience, or at this stage, and maybe it's three by the time they apply. I forget exactly where they're at. But you know, they got super numbers, right? They're 3.9 GPA, 750 on the GMAT. They look like they've done well to date in their shorter time frame of experience. So to me, this is a potential superstar, right? And we're going to talk more, you know, maybe when we talk about the second candidate, they're a little bit more of a proven track record, right? When schools are looking at folks that are a potential superstar, like in this case, they're going to take a little bit more of a risk. They're looking at the potential upside. They're going to need to take a bit more of a risk because it's not yet proven. But nevertheless, I think this candidate's done some pretty good stuff to date. They have a pretty interesting business idea that they're noodling on. I love that term, noodling. You've used it before. It seems to be one of these sort of new sort of techie terms that we sort of come up with. But, you know, if you're interested in entrepreneurship, as this candidate is, ADCOM is going to be more, is going to believe there's more credibility behind that interest if you have a sharp focus on what that entrepreneurial idea might be. So they've identified a market gap, they're going to go for it, that's quite interesting. But you also have an issue with that, Graham. I mean, if this person wants to be an entrepreneur, they're going to need to get funding, get partners, get networks and so on and so forth set up. In order to be successful. Is that best done on the West Coast of the United States?
Yeah, that is the other thing. So they have this HR idea where they want to, you know, kind of compete with LinkedIn a bit, but provide a platform, you know, for candidates to get feedback when they're turned down for a job. And they have a number of ideas in that kind of early career space. And I couldn't help, as I looked at their profile and I said, wow, you know, amazing numbers, light work experience, only a couple of years, but though, you know, it seems like it's been good work experience. And I started to think, a lot of these U.S. schools, Stanford, Harvard, et cetera, the very top U.S. schools, they like younger candidates who have, you know, shown a lot of potential and who maybe have a really interesting business idea like this person has. And so I was like, wow, is it right for them to go to Europe, where I feel like a lot of the schools have a slightly older student body when compared to their U.S. peers? And, you know, thinking about like entrepreneurship and raising money from VCs and having access to, you know, get, maybe you can get something incubated by a LinkedIn or someone that, you know, is in the same sector. I was wondering, like, is this person conflating a desire to like be in Europe with the need to get the MBA there? And I actually really like a lot of the European MBA programs. And as I said earlier, I think they've gained a ton of ground over the years to very effectively compete with the US. But when I'm talking about this candidate, younger candidate, stellar numbers, entrepreneurial goals, you know, I can't help but wonder, why aren't they looking at some of the top, you know, the Haases and the Stanfords or Harvards in the US too, at least as a hedge? Like, I just, that was my main thought when I saw this profile and was thinking about how are they going to raise money and where's the best place to do that. Obviously, if they're successful in their endeavor, they can always put the headquarters wherever they want in the long term, or, you know, or have an office in Spain or France if that's where they want to sit. But anyway, that's just my current thinking on this candidate.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add to this before we move on?
And the other options are international exchange programs and stuff like that during your MBA experience. So,
yes.
But I think your point's very valid. I mean, if they're going to go to European school, which, again, we wouldn't dissuade them necessarily to do that. There are some very good schools in Europe, but just making sure they've really thought through the resources that they're going to need to execute in terms of opportunity for the entrepreneurial business they're seeking to develop. And being a US-based person with limited European experience, that might be a little bit more tricky.
Yeah.
But yeah, a terrific candidate, lots of upside.
Yeah, and I was thinking about, you know, let's say they're out fundraising, you know, or let's say they went to like a place like Wharton and then they did a semester with INSEAD, which you can do from Wharton. You know, there are a lot of ways to go to one of these European campuses and spend, you know, a semester or at least a quarter. And I was also thinking, like, imagine they're raising money out on the West Coast. If you think about, you know, VCs looking at the resume, if they see a Wharton or a Stanford, that may signal something different to them than an IE, right? They right. may not, they, and again, I'm not saying IE is not a good school, but it just may not have the brand in the States that, you know, Stanford or other schools would have. So anyway, this is food for thought. Hopefully the candidate will take this under consideration and maybe, you know, kind of juggle the school selection list a little bit. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person has five schools on their list. They include Harvard Business School, INSEAD, Stanford, Wharton, and Yale. And they want to start in the fall of 2021. This person's been working in oil and gas for a major, an oil and gas major, and they want to get into consulting after business school. They've got the usual suspects, Bain, BCG, McKinsey on the list. Another big GMAT score, 750, GPA 3.4, and they've been working for 5.5 years. This person's currently in Nigeria. They'd love to end up in the US, Canada, or Europe. And they indicate that they are from Africa. They didn't specify which country. They said they have an engineering background, 5 years of experience with an energy multinational. And they indicate that they've actually worked in three different African countries. And currently, you know, they're in Nigeria, as I said. They basically want to become a leader in the clean energy sector. So, you know, their thought is go get an MBA, work in consulting, ideally maybe with some sector focus in energy, and use everything they've learned from that to kind of get into the, you know, renewable side of things or clean energy. So it's a really interesting goal. What do you make of this candidate? They have some good extracurriculars. Everything seems to line up for me, but I was curious what you make of this.
Yeah, I mean, as I said when we were discussing the last candidate, to me, in my mind, this candidate is potentially more proven in terms of on that pathway to be super successful. You know, they seem to have a decent, good career, five and a half years in this sort of oil and gas industry and so on and so forth. You know, obviously their GPA 3.4, but out of an engineering program, so that's tends to be a bit more rigorous. 750 GMAT, which is ridiculously good. What did you get on the GMAT, Graham? I mean, I would hate to share my GMAT score, but when I got it put me in Mensa. But it absolutely doesn't compare to what folks are getting today.
You're really putting me on the spot. And also, people have been complaining that a lot of the profiles we review have these high GMAT scores, and it's tough to find. I mean, people share when they have a high score. They're more readily willing to share.
But
750 is a great score.
Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic. Working several countries in Africa from Nigeria, or at least they're currently located in Nigeria. Their goals are fantastic, Graham. And I've said this before on this podcast. What are business schools looking for? Read their mission statements. They want high impact alumni. Alumni that have the potential to make a real impact in the world in the long run. And you read this person's profile, Graham, and you're like, yes, they've absolutely set up to be able to do that. In the long run, return to Africa. In the long run, looking at the clean energy space and so on and so forth. So, you know, frankly, without overdoing it, there's not much not to like about this candidate. And then you get to the bottom of his note section. I believe it's male, but I'm guessing there. I don't know if we know that. It says other ECs, mentorship of students interested in engineering. That's very good. Coca farm and community reach related to fire prevention and coca process. I mean, there's some interesting stuff here. I don't know. We need to spend a lot of time on this person. Looks like a superstar. They're sort of proven. They're obviously targeting the very best schools: Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton, INSEAD, Yale. They're doing that, I think, in round one, and I think they've got a couple of other schools that they're thinking about in round two: Sloan, Booth, Haas. So I think they're going to be in great shape.
Yeah. So I want to just ask you two quick things about this person and then we can move on. I agree with you that they're clearly very well qualified and they just need to execute right on the applications. Yeah. But I wanted to know, they have this comment that they said, my dream is Harvard, Stanford, or Wharton. I love SOM too, which is Yale. And then they say, INSEAD is great, but I'm afraid that 1 year would be too intense. So I would just ask you, like, so should they keep it on their list if that's how they feel about it? Because it is a really different format from the other schools. And they seem like it says, I want to use my MBA as a transformational experience. Yeah. And I guess they're thinking that the 2 years would be better for that. So what do you think?
I mean, I would agree. I mean, INSEAD is a terrific program, but it's going to be super intense. It basically, its offering is going to be quite different. They may decide to apply to INSEAD. That's perfectly fine. But if they get the offers across the board, it would be hard to convince me that INSEAD is your best option if you're looking for a truly transformational experience, to be able to take a deep breath, maybe do an internship, explore some other stuff along the way. I would agree with that.
Yeah, okay. And then the only other thing I wanted to mention is they have Yale on the list. And, I think some of that may be Yale's a rising star in the MBA world, obviously, kind of increasingly viewed as a top 10 program. But I think also some of what may be happening here is that the brand of Yale University is incredibly strong globally. Yeah. And so there might be some of that happening. If you think about working in Africa there, like there may be some benefits to this. Is, I think, Oxford and Cambridge and other schools benefit from a similar kind of parent institution brand. So that's clearly probably what's driving this. Although it sounds like they've done the research and they really like the program too, which is something we hear over and over again, because it's a pretty close-knit small program. And it's, as I said, it's increasingly rising in the rankings. So anything else on this one? Again, I wish this person the best of luck. Same, I don't know if I said that about the first one, but same with them. Hopefully this advice is useful.
Yeah, but you do make a very good point. And I think we said this in the the other recorded version that had in take one. But the idea is, I mean, this person, it seems on paper, is a terrific candidate, but it will always be down to execution of the application. Yeah. So you don't want to fall into the trap that, I've got great numbers, I look great on paper, and therefore don't put the effort and energy into each of the individual applications, addressing the essays properly and the recs and so on and so forth. It requires great candidacy and great execution, especially if you're targeting Harvard, Stanford, Wharton right at the very top.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And I've seen so many candidates with amazing numbers and the perfect kind of, you know, work background who get rejected. And then they're kind of like, well, what on earth could have happened? This is ridiculous. And then you get a look at their file and you're like, well, you didn't put any effort into your essays. It's obvious, you know. Yeah. So, all right, so let's move along. We've got one more candidate for this week. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person has 8 schools on their list, and they include Berkeley, Harvard, Michigan, MIT, Stanford, UCLA, Wharton, and Yale. They want to start school next fall, 2021. They've been working in consulting, but in a kind of policy, communications, and economics domain. They're actually based in DC, so, you know, think, yeah, public kind of consulting or probably NGO type consulting too. They ultimately want to get into more traditional consulting and then longer term kind of nonprofit social impact stuff. And they've got Bain, BCG, and McKinsey on the list, as does everyone. GMAT score 760. GPA is 3.2. And they have 3 years of work experience. And they indicate that they'd love to do kind of more traditional consulting in the near term because they've been at a kind of boutique firm. And that ideally they'd fall into the arm, the kind of nonprofit, kind of focused arm of a big consulting firm like a Bain or a BCG, et cetera. So that's what they'd like to do in the short term. And then longer term, they want to ideally lead an economic development organization. So thinking about like public-private partnerships and collaboration. And again, they indicate that they've already been promoted at this small boutique consulting firm they're working for now. They've had a lot of responsibility. And they also say that the client portfolio includes some flashy household names. That's a direct quote. So I think they're thinking if the firm they're working for is relatively unknown and small, at least the clients that they've assisted are known, kind of brands. So, you know, they also talked about their academics, right? Because they have this 3.2. And I wanted to get your take on this. You know, they indicate they went to a public Ivy, they majored in econ and politics, but that they have no real excuse for the GPA and that they're hoping the GMAT will kind of, you know, help cover that as well as the caliber of the school they attended. So, yeah, what do you make of this candidate? Because that 3.2 is something that jumps out at me.
Yeah, it does jump out at me, but it jumps out at me because it is definitely the weakest element of the application. And again, something that we've talked about before on this podcast, the most important element of any candidate's application is going to be its weakest link, because that, in essence, is going to sort of drive the level of school you ultimately should be targeting. So that all sounds like doom and gloom, but frankly, Graham, I think there's a lot to like here. And if you've got a 760 GMAT, you're very, 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 very smart. So the 3.2 GPA is lower than average. Is it catastrophic? Well, it's a 3.2. It's lower than average. I think some of it will have to do with the transcript itself. And, you know, if there's, you know, a few D's in some key and important classes, that might be a problem. To some extent, it'll to do with the makeup of the transcript. But you'd have to assume, Graham, that presuming this work experience is good, and she says it's good, and it seems like it's going to be quite good, and this GMAT score is obviously outstanding, and the work experience is backed up with really strong recommendations and so on and so forth, this person's got to be smart enough to do well in the classroom in an MBA program, Graham. I mean, wouldn't you think? And you would think that they're motivated enough to succeed in the MBA program. And that's basically what we're going to be looking at when we're looking at the numbers sides of the application.
Yeah, I mean, again, I agree. We started out a little doom and gloom, but I think this person also, I didn't mention it, but she indicates she's South Asian American female. So that's kind of her kind of background in terms of demographics. But I sort of feel like the 760 will go a long way. I think she probably will need to address the GPA somewhere, maybe in the optional essay. Some schools have a specific, you know, question around, you know, whether you feel that your undergraduate performance is an accurate, predictor of how you're going to do in the future. So I think she may need to address it. And the thing that I'm a little worried about is, she can't say, well, I went to a really good public Ivy and my GMAT's strong. Like, she needs to think very carefully about how she would position it. And it can't just be, oh, I don't really have an excuse, you know. I went to too many parties, or, you know, it can't be. So ideally there's something where she, you know, she can just talk about how, you know, look, it took me a while to get, ideally maybe there's an upward trend or something in the GPA that she can point to, kind of getting her sea legs, adjusting, maybe there was some immaturity, whatever it is, like just own it, explain that you really feel that the current GMAT score, that you've achieved is a better reflection of your academic aptitude than the GPA, and that you're really excited to, you know, return to the classroom and get into business school and stuff. So I just think that's, it will need to be addressed, but I don't think it's a hurdle that will keep this person out of getting into business school. I also think she has a really good list of schools. They're kind of, you know, it's a broad list. It's not only like sort of the top three in the US or something. She's got a nice list. And I think, the only question I was thinking about, I mentioned this to you the other day, I wondered whether or not she might get the question from an interviewer along the lines of, well, if you're so interested in NGOs and policy and that kind of side of things, why aren't you applying to, you know, the Kennedy School at Harvard or Woodrow Wilson at Princeton and just doing a policy degree? So that's something she's going to need to be able to answer. And maybe she's considering joint degrees. I don't know. But it is something she's going to need to be able to explain, like, what's the rationale for taking the route that she's taking?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a fair comment. I think it's something that she needs to have clarity over in her own mind. And I would assume, again, she's smart. She will have thought about this issue, and she just needs to be ready and prepared to answer it. So, yeah, frankly, Graham, I think this person... again, with great execution on the applications, some explanation as to the 3-2, without, you know, overdoing it or whatever.
Sure.
But they have a pretty realistic set of target schools. Obviously, they're aiming for the very best, but they're also spreading themselves out a little bit. So I think that's very smart. And I would be surprised if they don't get some really good opportunities.
Yeah, agreed. So again, this candidate has a lot of potential. Interesting. We didn't really touch on it that much, but really interesting kind of career background. I mean, we gave the details of what it is, but I didn't really point out that it's not every day that you get folks, you know, in DC working in like policy related consulting or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, she's been doing. Like it's not everyday stuff. So, and I think that, the extracurricular is also really strong, you know, teaching ESL, and to immigrants. And I mean, yeah, she's just been doing a lot of good work, pioneering some, you know, diversity and inclusion initiatives at work. And she also seems to have an interest in dance. So there's a lot here. Again, I just think she needs to go in eyes wide open, and, you know, she has a good school selection, as you said. So
yeah,
I thank this person for sharing their background, and I hope that she does really well in the process. And yeah, that this advice kind of keeps her at least aware of like where this pitfall may be and how to best kind of address it if it comes up.
I think that's perfect. Maybe she needs to also go on the new tools that we just launched, Key in 760, and see how she lands in some of these schools in terms of, you know, where her data points measure up against other folk.
Yeah, that's true. She could do that. She could do the same with the GPA too. But anyway, yeah, so I think that wraps it up for this week, Alex. We'll be back in 1 week's time. I also, I got a chance to sit down with three senior, like a couple of faculty and a career services person from Duke University the other day to do a special podcast about how the MBA has been evolving. So I'm excited. That'll be forthcoming. It's probably another week or two out, but it's coming. And yeah, in the meantime, everyone should sign up and use the LiveWire data dashboard. And you know, hopefully they won't get so distracted by, you know, putting in numbers into that they'll forget to listen to the podcast every week. But it is a lot of fun. So I'm encouraging people to look into that. Other than that, thanks, Alex, for picking these out as always. And I guess we'll see you in 1 week's time.
Yeah, very good. Best of luck, everyone, and stay safe. Good luck.